Welcome to the Soldier for Life podcast, where we share information and resources for our military and veteran families, from employment and education to health and wellness and Army retirement. We're here to help you learn more about programs and resources that are available to our Army family. The information shared in this podcast does not constitute an endorsement by Soldier for Life, United States Army, or the Department of Defense. And now, let's get started with this week's episode.
Thank you for joining us today for another episode of the Soldier for Life podcast. I'm your host, Colonel Jarrett Thomas. As all of you know, Soldier for Life works with a lot of fantastic organizations across the country, and they all have a common goal of improving the lives of our soldiers, veterans, and their families. But one of our favorites, and one that does a great job of helping to connect us with so many individuals and support groups that we know around the U.S., is the Civilian Aides to the Secretary of the Army, or the CASA program. They are America's link to the Army. Civilian Aides to the Secretary of the Army are civilian business and community leaders from each U.S. state and territory that are appointed by the Secretary of the Army to advise and support Army leaders across the country. CASAs bridge the gap between the Army and the civilian community and serve as Army's ambassadors, providing critical connections to build partnerships and enhance relationships between America and its Army. We are incredibly fortunate today to not only have the director of the CASA program on the show, but also two of our CASAs from North Carolina and Georgia. So before we get started, let's take a minute to introduce them. Our first guest today is Ms. Angie Ritz, the director of the CASA program. Angie has served in the CASA program office since 2014. As director, she manages all aspects of the CASA program, including the important job of overseeing the 100 plus CASAs in the program. I consider Angie a friend and a great supporter of the Soldier for Life program. Angie, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, sir. You are a great partner to the CASA program. Soldier for Life is one of our priorities, and so we are so excited to do this podcast in support of your program and to say a little bit more about the CASA program.
Our next guest is CASA Angela Odom, who represents Georgia North. CASA Odom has been serving as a CASA since July 2022. She's a veteran, deployed multiple times, and retired in 2015 after 27 years of service. CASA Odom is now the founder of the Better You Project brand, the host of the Better You Leadership Podcast, and has authored or co-authored several books. CASA Odom, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Such an honor.
And thank you for being here. Finally, we've got CASA Mabry Bud Martin from North Carolina Central. CASA Martin was appointed as a CASA in September 2018. He is also an Army veteran, attained the rank of Brigadier General, and retired in 2008 following his final assignment as a North Carolina Joint Task Force Commander and Deputy Commanding General National Guard at Fort Leonard Wood. In his civilian career, CASA Martin worked for 29 years at PPG Industries Fiberglass Division, ending his career as the Manager of Enterprise Excellence at their Lexington, North Carolina manufacturing plant. CASA Martin, thank you for being with us today on our podcast.
Thank you, sir. It's quite an honor for me to be able to participate in this and share our views and what we do as a CASAs, because I think it's so important, and it's just a great opportunity for me to continue to serve after my retirement.
Thank you for your continued service to our nation and to our soldiers and their families. Angie, why don't we start things off by telling us a little bit about the CASA program and why it was created?
Yes, absolutely. So the CASA program is actually 100 years old. We got our roots coming out of World War I, where we learned that we needed community influencers to help us find troops and get them trained up. And so coming out of World War I, we kept that concept. And really, the program hasn't changed since those early days. We continue to use CASAs as community ambassadors who can help fill the gap, bridge that gap between the American public and our great military. And as fewer Americans choose to serve, we need that bridge even more each day. The Secretary calls the CASAs her eyes and ears to the local communities. So they are really the liaison from the Army to their local communities. So our CASAs, as you said, sir, are influencers. They're business leaders, they're academics, they're people in their community who can help the CASAs tell the great Army story to the American public. And what we want to do is we are hoping to increase awareness of the program. Even though we're 100 years old, a lot of people don't know about the CASA program. And so we want to ensure that these amazing ambassadors and liaisons are well known in their community. They are unpaid volunteers. So hopefully Bud and Angela know that. They don't get rich being CASAs. The secretary hand selects them, and they are three-star equivalents. And so that's for protocol status. It shows how important they are and how prestigious the position is. They serve a one-year term, and they're eligible to be renewed for 10 years. So during those 10 years, they have a huge impact in their community. They help our recruiters. And as we'll get in a little later, they basically help represent the Army.
No, that is really, really great. The important thing is, and for those that haven't had an opportunity to work with CASAs, they are important to our Army. The great thing about the CASA program, too, is the secretary is involved with the selection of each and every individual in the program, and the secretary gets it right every time. And not only can the community count on our CASAs that are out there, but just like I said earlier, our Army leaders and the families that they support also count on these CASAs. So I'm really, really excited to talk to them today, and get the word out for those of our listeners that have not had an opportunity to interact with CASAs in the past. Now let's really talk about the CASAs themselves and who they are. So first, let's talk about how many CASAs are in the program and where do they serve?
Great. Yeah, absolutely, sir. So we have, we don't have a finite number. It ebbs and flows. When I took over the program about 10 years ago, we had about 90 CASAs, and we've grown all the way up to about 125 at our peak. Right now, we're at about 120 positions, give or take a few. So they serve in every state and every territory. So we have at least one CASA in every state, and we have one in each of our five territories. In most of our larger states, such as Texas, California, and Florida, we have multiple CASAs, eight or nine. And in most of our major cities, we have a CASA now.
What's important is the reason why, you know, we have the CASAs, you know, selected and doing what they're doing is they're very influential in the areas where they live. And so how do you select, you know, the right CASA, and how long do they typically serve?
That's a great question, because, you know, a lot of people ask, what's the secret sauce to an effective CASA? And I have to tell you, it's not necessarily military experience. It's not necessarily money. It's not necessarily age. It really has to do with that CASA's community connections. You know, did they go to school with the local superintendent? Were they the mayor of the town? Did they grow up in the city? How much do they know all of the folks, all the decision makers in the town? And so we try to find those individuals who are in the cities, who are in any community, who are really the influencers of it. And it may be somebody in the school district. It may be a successful businessman. It may be a former political official. Now, there are a few things that, although CASAs are very varied in what they do, there's a few things that they can't do or that they have to do. They have to be a U.S. citizen. A lot of people don't know they do not have to have military experience. Only about 65% of our CASAs actually have served. We just say you have to have a love of the military. You need to want to take care of our soldiers and their families. I'm an Army civilian. I've never served. You could be an Army brat. You could be an Army contractor. You can actually be Navy, Air Force, or Marines. We actually have some CASAs from other services. So we just say you have to have a love of the military. You have to be an influencer in your community. And you have to really be a good communicator, because most of the CASA job is communicating the Army story. You cannot be a current federal employee or a member of the military, including the reserve or the guard. And then you can't have any major conflict of interest. You can be a defense contractor, but you have to fill out a financial disclosure. And that way we would know what your conflicts are. You could be a president of organization. In fact, most of our CASAs are very involved in organizations and with their elected officials. So all of our prohibitions and requirements are on our CASA website, which is army.mil/CASA. And on resources, you can see all of our criteria to be a CASA or the prohibitions. And it also talks a little bit about how to be a CASA. Sir, you asked about that. So the secretary does hand select these CASAs. They serve at the will of the secretary, but anybody can nominate. When we do have a vacancy, we go out and we widely advertise the vacancy, but anybody can self-nominate at any time. We get most of our nominees from Soldier for Life, from Recruiting Command, or from the elected officials in a state, but anybody can actually send in a resume or bio if they're interested. Of course, we only fill it if there is a vacancy, but we're always looking for great CASAs, and all of that information is on our website.
No, I highly recommend if a vacancy comes available, please take a look at the website so that you know the criteria, the requirement, if you're interested in becoming a CASA, because I'll tell you, we always need the positions to be filled because they're so influential and so helpful to our military and their families. So, CASA Odom, CASA Martin, can you tell us about how and why you both became CASAs?
So for me, I was fortunate enough to serve with one of the CASAs, Anita Dixon, who is, she supports Washington, D.C. We both retired as Army colonels. And she reached out to me and informed me of the vacancy in Georgia. And I had been retired probably about 6-7 years at that point. And she explained to me, you know, the duties and what her day might look like and how she was still able to serve. And so I was able to be in alignment with really what was important to me, and that was to intentionally mentor other military women, which was what I was doing already. And then just to share the Army story. And she pointed out to me, she's like, well, girl, you're doing it already. And so I was like, you know what? This is a great opportunity and a very, very honorable way to purposefully serve our communities and the nation. So for me, Hal was someone that I respected very much, reached out to me and explained the left and right limits of the program itself and how impactful the program members are within the communities. And for Georgia, there are 4 CASAs here. So 2 of us are in the north, and then we have 1 near Fort Stewart and 1 near Fort Moore. And so I was just very grateful for the opportunity, and then have 2 years down in the program. And I just tell you, I love it. I love being able to interact and engage with our recruiting battalion and also soldiers that are transitioning and the veterans that are currently serving, you know, just having conversations about the benefits of the Army and how we might help others learn more about the Army. So why I continue to serve as a CASA is I think it's a fantastic program. And thank you for that question.
Thank you for the response. And CASA Martin, over to you.
Well, as you kind of read in my bio, when I retired in 2008, I still wanted to stay connected with the military in lots of different ways. And I will say one of them, I ended up joining as a volunteer for ESGR, which is Employer Support for the Guard and Reserve. That is a Department of Defense volunteer organization. In fact, I've been working with them for now. I've completed my 15th year this year. And with that, I also was involved at one time with the North Carolina Military Affairs Commission, which was appointed by the governor. And we worked on a lot of policies in North Carolina that would positively affect our veterans and our soldiers, and policies that would help transitioning soldiers, even spouses. And one thing we finally have established as a result of that is we no longer have a state income tax in North Carolina for retired veterans. So with that, one day I got a call from Tommy Bolton, who is a CASA emeritus now. And he called me, and he was the only CASA at the time in the state of North Carolina. And he said, you know, Bud, I really think you would be great in this role. He described a little bit about it. I knew a little bit about the CASA role. So as we began to talk more and he described it, I said, you know, that is something I really, really would like to do. So I would, yes, if you want to nominate me, I'd be more than happy to serve if I'm selected. So he did nominate me. And then I guess here I am. The rest was history. And I'm just so thrilled that I was selected and so thrilled that I'm able to get out in the community, interface with soldiers, veterans, and talk about our great Army.
Could you tell us a little bit about the day in the life of a CASA? You know, what are the CASA's typical duties and how do they help the Army?
As Angie mentioned earlier, you know, our priorities in the CASA program is, of course, recruiting and taking care of soldiers. And really what I say, soldier for life, because I'm in a little bit of a rural area here in North Carolina. I'm also not located at Fort Liberty. There is a CASA located there. So a lot of my work is out in the community, networking, attending veterans coffees, as an example, just keeping our veterans and people in the community advised of their Army and what's going on in the Army. In terms of recruiting, I just recently actually had a briefing by the recruiting battalion commander out of Raleigh, and we discussed what his recruiting plan is going to be for the upcoming, basically, fiscal year. Starting out at how we can attack the schools. And even though here in the South, at least the numbers have said that the brigade that's located in Huntsville, Alabama, is really doing quite well in recruiting. In fact, they're saying if we stay on the same trajectory we are, we could meet or surpass even the prior COVID days. So, but we've got to continue to focus on that. So with that, we're going to be working hard to try to touch as many seniors as we can in the high schools, at least in my area. And we want to focus on increasing the numbers of ASVAB testing in the schools. And so that is a focus that's going to happen this fall. And then later on, after the school kicks in, we are also going to focus on recruiting women, which is a big push and a good thing. We should be doing that. So these are some of the typical things. I'll talk more when we get into some of the veteran organizations and so forth. But finally, I'll tell you another good example is that we've been having difficulty for the medical recruiters getting into Duke University, believe it or not. And I happen to have a friend who I worked with at PPG Industries, who was the director of research. And so I have been able to connect with him because he is now working and supporting Duke University. He's good friends of the president. And through those discussions and network, we've actually been able to open up some dialogue with a future meeting scheduled with the medical recruiting battalion. They're going to be coming in to Raleigh, and we're going to kind of have lunch and educate Duke on how they can help and support us in the area of the medical doctor type recruiting. So that's kind of a typical day. You know, we're on the phone a lot. We might be networking. We're talking. Things don't happen fast, but you just kind of chip away at it and work at it. And sooner or later, big things happen.
I am not co-located with one of the military installations in Georgia. I'm here near Gillum Enclave, and also there's several colleges in the area. Georgia Military College, of course, Junior Military College, and then University of North Georgia. And of course, the Army Recruiting Battalion is very active here in the area. And there are several organizations that work with soldiers who are transitioning. And for me, it might just be from a call, would you attend this program, or are you available to speak to this particular group? Or if it is, can you come and sit on this panel? We want to talk about Army issues. Or it might just, let's meet the governor is doing A, B, and C. Would you like to come and attend this event? But most of my time is allocated to where the recruiters would want me to serve, since I'm not co-located with one of the military installations.
Colonel Thomas, if I could jump in, as you guys can hear, you know, Bud and Angela are two of our best CASAs. They are so engaged in their state and they're really good at what they do. But as you can hear, they're very varied in what they do. And that's very typical of CASAs, because there is no typical day in the life of a CASA, because there is no typical CASA. Each CASA is so different. Just like you said, sir, to start with, they come from all walks of life. So, you know, a retired general like Bud might be very different than a former or current CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Might be different than you are when you're a teacher in a public school. Might be different than if you're a professor at a college or a farmer or a lawyer. And so each CASA, that's the great thing about the program, is each CASA brings their own experience, both their prior experience and their current job and their current lifestyle to the program. And that's what they can choose to do their CASA work on. The secretary has given the CASAs three priorities, which we did hit on, but I want to make sure that those are very clear. So Secretary Warmoth has asked the CASAs to focus on recruiting, which is their number one priority. As Bud mentioned, we're doing much better this year, but we still need all hands on deck to help with recruiting. So that is the number one priority for the CASAs, is to help their local recruiters. And even that is varied, because a recruiter right outside Fort Sill or Fort Liberty is going to have a very different job than a recruiter in Portland or New York City or the state of Montana. So the work that a CASA needs to do is varied based on what the recruiter needs. Second is taking care of soldiers, and that is as broad as it sounds. So that is taking care of our soldiers, their families, all soldiers, including active guard reserve, and the civilians, the contractors, anybody at all that identifies with Army, that's what we want our CASAs to help with. And finally, helping transitioning soldiers, which is where we work with Soldier for Life the most. And so that is everything from helping get corporations to help with the sign up for the PAYS program, the Partnership for Your Success, where we help offer interviews to outgoing soldiers, to helping with legislation, like Bud had mentioned, helping with spouse reciprocity so that we can help with licensure in their state and help those spouses who are the key to the Army retention, help them get and maintain jobs. So that's the whole taking care of transitioning soldiers. And that's where we work with Soldier for Life. The Army has so many great programs like Soldier for Life that we ask our CASAs not to recreate the wheel, get with Soldier for Life and work with them. And then, like I think you can tell from Bud and Angela, very different locations. So a CASA's role also very much depends on where they're located. As I said, they are in all states and territories. A CASA in Northern Mariana Islands is going to be very different than a CASA in Atlanta. And so the great thing is we need all of them, but it really varies. The CASA role varies based on where they're located.
And I really appreciate all of those answers, because just like you mentioned, we all know that the Secretary's priorities are the Army's priorities, and being able to communicate those priorities to our local communities, and our CASAs are so influential in those local communities. I think that helps get after some of those big, complex, you know, problems that the Army is facing. And, you know, ultimately, we've got to sustain this all-volunteer force that we've had for the past 50-plus years. In order to do that, you know, we've got to continue to be connected with the Army. The Army cannot do it on its own. We need our local community. So we appreciate, you know, what the CASAs do to bring everyone to the table. And just like you said, bring the partners to the table to get after that. So we really appreciate that response and how you kind of clarified, you know, what CASAs do on a daily basis. It varies, but it's a lot of work. And just like you mentioned earlier, it's a lot of work for unpaid people that do that, but we really appreciate what they do. And they've done a lot for our Army, and we'll continue to do a lot for our Army over the next few years as well. Let me ask you this. We talked earlier about how CASAs, you know, bridge the gap between Army and the civilian community. What kind of relationships do CASAs have with key stakeholders and influencers in their communities? And how do they go about fulfilling this part of their CASA mission?
I think a lot of these organizations are just great resources to our CASAs. And so we just like we partner with our Army programs, we partner with these MSOs, VSOs, the affinity groups. And so I'll actually turn it right over to Bud and Angela, because they're the ones who partner with them. And I'm sure they have key organizations that they actually use on a daily basis to help their CASA role.
Thanks, Angie. I'll take this on first, I guess, if you don't mind. I'll just give you one. There's an organization called the Charlotte Bridge Homes in Charlotte, North Carolina. They have been helping sponsor a monthly veterans coffee at the Richard Childress Racing, part of NASCAR. And he does this once a month. And we have a great group that comes of veterans. And in some cases, we've even had some swearing in of new recruits there. For these veterans who are basically soldiers for life and veterans for life, to stand up and give these young men and women a hand for joining and becoming part of us, part of the team, as I guess you can say. And recently, we honored over 600 Vietnam veterans, and we fed them breakfast with the support of Richard Childress Racing, with the support of the Charlotte Bridge Home, and with support of the Gary Sinise Foundation. It was a great event, and usually at those, I have opportunities to speak. In fact, they let me speak so much sometimes that I run out of things to say, but I can always find something. But so that is one typical organization here in North Carolina. As I mentioned earlier, I work with ESGR, and I leverage that volunteership also to help when we're talking about Soldier for Life, we're talking about recruiting. And one quick example is coming up in September with ESGR, we're actually going to sponsor a lunch with what we call the Defense Association of North Carolina, where we're going to have about 40 or 50 business leaders to come in over at High Point. We're going to feed them lunch, and then we're going to talk to them about their role as an employer to our Guard and Reserve folks, and also talk about the Army. Finally, there's an organization in High Point called the Hero Center, and they're actually part of a partnership with the Chamber there and with Visit High Point. And they've actually taken bus trips down and have brought soldiers back who are transitioning out to let them tour High Point and let them see the city, let them see what's available there in terms of education, like High Point University, or childcare, or special needs if someone has a special needs child. So there's a lot of wonderful organizations here that I can't even keep up with all the coffees that go on in this area that different organizations are supporting for our veterans, and of course our Guard folks and whatever. So those connections has also helped me come up with space where if the recruiters want to have a meeting, or the recruiters want to have a facility that might be a little better than they have, they don't have to pay for it. I kind of use that leverage to help, and they're always very open. So that gives you some overview of some of the organizations, many more, but kind of highlights those that I work with quite often.
So for me, I mostly work with USO, AARP, and then AUSA. I start with the recruiters. I did reach out to our Atlanta Recruiting Battalion Commander to ensure that, I gained clarity on how I can best support the overall recruiting mission. And so he set up a meeting for me with the station commanders, and they were able to give me some really good feedback. And because I have been retired for a few years, I want to make sure that I am aligned with what's actually important to them. So I served recently as a speaker for the state's VFW's conference, and I was able to invite some recruiters there so they could, meet some of the people who are in their area and, make some connections that way. Something else that came out of that meeting with the recruiting station commanders was an opportunity to collaborate with Cadet Command, where we were able to host a program for 100 JROTC students, the high school students taking JROTC, and have the USO and some other organizations come out, but mainly the active recruiters, the National Guard, and also the reserve components came out to support and to talk with those students. We also had some West Point students and to come and do a leadership panel where the commanding general for Fort Jackson came. He's a West Point graduate and also was able to engage with the students. And that was a great opportunity that came out of that initial session with the recruiting station commanders, saying this is what's important to us and this is how you and your role as a civilian aide to the Secretary of the Army might be able to support the overall mission. So for me, it is a great opportunity, first of all, to stay connected with other veterans, you know, with the USO, the AARP, and then AUSA, and then more importantly, with the role I serve as a CASA, it gives me an opportunity to continue to stay abreast of what's important to the Army, what's important to the Secretary. And so I'm grateful for any connections I might be able to make with our recruiters.
You know, thanks for providing those answers from both of you on, you know, how you stay connected and collaborate with your local community. Like we mentioned earlier, this is not an easy job. It's something that you have to stay, you know, focused on. You need to know what the issues are. You need to know what the Army's response to some of the questions and concerns are. So staying connected both to the Army and staying connected to local community, I think helps get after some of these things that you're trying to tackle for our service. So we really appreciate that. What are some of those topics or areas of concern that you are currently encountering, you know, across in your particular area, and how are the CASAs helping to address some of those topics?
But I will, I'll take this first, and then I know you'll come in swinging with the big bat. For me, it is educating the public on the necessity and the benefit of service to our nation. There's so many negative talking heads. There's a lot of news on what's wrong with, you know, our nation and our serving military right now. And of course, we have conflicts that we're engaged in. And so for me, I simply focus on educating everyday citizens, starting with the folks, you know, right here in my neighborhood and in my community on being of service to others and how that's really, for me, is the highest honor we can have is to serve. And that is in all capacities. The civilian personnel are supporting our military. And then there's so many different specialties that the Army has. And so we can serve in, you know, different capacities and use these skills that we might already have to enhance, you know, a bigger team, a greater team, and serve something greater than bigger than ourselves. So really, for me, what I see is our public just needs to be reminded of the valuable service that our military provides, our Army personnel, the things that they are doing for all of us day in and day out. And it is with great pride that I continue to, you know, have conversations one-on-one in groups as I am speaking. I was just at a family reunion, and I was a keynote speaker at the family reunion acknowledging the veterans there, and had a conversation with one of my distant cousins about his service. And he used the word jester. I think he said, I only served. He was talking about the number of years. And I was like, first thing you're going to do is stop that only. You served, right? And so the message is that it is a great honor to have served and to serve now. And, you know, just talk about the benefits of our amazing Army. So that's what I see. But what do you see?
Well, Angela, I have to agree with you, and I don't really have a lot to add to that. I think that if you talk about the challenges, I've had conversations with our Adjutant General in North Carolina, and he gets out and about, and there are a lot of veterans out there. You know, the news paints negative pictures. They're not getting the true message, and so I think that's a big role we have, too, is to get out there and talk about our great Army and talk about the positive things and talk about the great future that a young soldier who joins our Army can have, because we know what happens. Most of them come out, they're very involved in their community, they're very patriotic, they're hard workers, they're dedicated. So I would say that is the biggest challenge too, is to get out in the community and re-educate. And yes, the Army today is not the Army they were in, but that's okay. That's okay. And we need to just to continue to educate. But I'm in agreeing with you. I think that's probably the biggest thing we have to address when we're out there. Even though, you know, veterans are very positive about our country, it takes a little bit of extra work, I think, to convince them that don't listen to everything you listen to on mainstream media, whatever. And I can tell you better what's really happening out there, and it's good stuff.
Well, Colonel Thomas, if I can jump in here, I'll tell you what, this is the secret sauce of CASAs. This is why we have CASAs. You heard Angela and Bud. They help translate the Army story to the public. There's a lot of myths and misnomers out there about the Army. And so what we do with the CASA program is we show them firsthand. We've been taking small groups of soldiers down to the Future Soldier Prep course at Fort Jackson so they can see what we're doing in this new recruiting program where we recruit folks who may not be quite ready to join the Army, but there were so many myths out there that we were lowering standards and that we were taking people who weren't going to be good for the Army. And we took the CASAs down there to meet with the drill sergeants and said, are these kids good enough? And the drill sergeant said, absolutely. By the time they get out of basic training, they are just as good as any other soldier. And we met with the future soldiers and said, why did you join? There's both a track for fitness where they may not be quite ready to join the Army because of fitness, or there's one also where they can't get a high enough score on the ASVAB. And so what we do is we just show them how to help a standardized test. And we help them get to the level to join the Army. We're not lowering the standard. We are bringing them up to the standard. And then what we do with the CASAs is we actually bring them to their graduation, and when they meet with the parents and they see this patriotism. And one of the greatest things about the basic training graduation is seeing the pride of the parents and the girlfriends and the boyfriends and the friends and the family members of the cadets or of the recruits who just graduated. And we say, if we could bottle up that patriotism and the pride in our Army, we wouldn't have any recruiting problem. But the problem is, just like probably most people listening to this podcast, is we're recruiting ourselves. It's a family business. And so how do we get the biggest challenge I see, and this is how we use the CASAs, is how do we get that pride in the Army and that, you know, the information about the benefits of the education, you know, the benefits of the Army and the career skills. It used to be, you know, you'd only join the Army as a last resort. Now we try to show how, you know, people like Angela and Bud, how you join the Army and you can have successful careers even after the Army. You may serve for 5 years or you may serve for 30 years. And so we use the CASAs to explain the path to join the Army and the success and the benefits of the Army. And so that's really the key, because what they can do is go out and speak to the Rotary Club and the schools. It's a little different to have a recruiter come in than it is to have a successful community influencer come talk about the success of the Army and the benefits of the Army. So you guys hit it right on. That's exactly what they do, is they help tell the Army story back to their community. And we're hoping, because that's what I keep hearing from CASAs, is that's the hardest challenge, is just that because we recruit, because it is a family business and we continue to recruit from our own families, how do you combat all of the myths and misnomers about serving in the Army?
I think those were all great responses. I think really, as you all mentioned, we do a great job telling the Army story to the Army. We've got to do a better job of telling the Army story to people that are not in the Army or not connected to military communities or do not see the military on a daily basis. And that's where our CASAs come in. I think you all know I'm a huge fan of the CASA program. And so for those that are just learning about what CASAs do, how can individuals and organizations from across the country find their CASA?
Yeah, well, we have a great website. So if you go to www.army.mil/CASA, CASA, you can actually go to find a CASA and you can actually email a CASA right from there. So for example, if you tried to find Angela, you can go to Georgia and you would find her email address there. We're also all over social media. CASAs are varying. They're varied in their social media presence, but the CASA program itself actually has an X, formerly Twitter account. We have Meta, formerly Facebook account, and we're also on LinkedIn. And so I always say that the best way to show what CASAs do and to find your CASA is to go on social media and see the pictures and see the events. You know, both Angela and Bud talked about different events that they support. Well, what I try to do is I'm so proud of all them. And so I exploit them on social media. And so I will share every post I can about what they're doing out in the community. So to find their own CASA, it would be the army.mil/CASA. And to learn more about the CASAs and see what they do, I would go to one of the CASAs social media sites.
We're coming to the end of the episode. Is there one last point or topic that any of you want to make or address before we end, or one last thing that you want to share?
First of all, thank you so much for having us on here. Again, outreach is very important to me because I think the only way that we can continue to be successful and effective is if people understand what a CASA is and what they do so that they can use the CASAs in their community. And also that we can continue to look like the Army that we represent. And the only way we can do that is to increase awareness of the program so we can increase the nominees for each position. I'm very proud of the diversity of our program. When I say diversity, I'm talking age, career, officer versus enlisted, chief warrant officer, 5 years in versus 30, male, female. I mean, we really are trying hard to look like the Army that we're representing. And so we are really proud about how we have diversified the program. Great individuals who are really can help tell the Army story. Again, about 70% are former military, our veterans, our soldiers for life, but all 100% have the common bond that they just love our soldiers and they want to help tell the Army story.
I'll just jump in here with one thing. We also have the opportunity to nominate individuals for the Minuteman Scholarship. That is, and this year particularly, there was one 3-year scholarship if you're going to a private school, and or if you're going to a state school, it's a 4-year scholarship. So it's a really great honor for me to talk to a young man or young woman out there who's really interested in a scholarship and wants to join our reserve or our National Guard and want to become an officer through the S&P program. And we have that opportunity to nominate them for that scholarship. And I'm excited every time I do that. And so that's a great program that we are able to participate in, of course, as well as the adjutant generals and the reserve ambassadors. But I'm proud to be able to nominate these young people. And then finally, I'll tell you, just say there's 3 CASAs here in North Carolina, one at Fort Liberty, as we mentioned, Charlotte in here. And we are a team and we work together. We share information. We mentor each other. So it's really a team effort. No one owns any particular territory per se, whether our titles say it or not. But we're here to serve the Army, all 3 of us in North Carolina, and we're proud to do it.
I think, for me, I want to say thank you for the opportunity to just to participate and to share a perspective from CASAs and, of course, from our program director. It's a great opportunity to continue to serve intentionally and purposefully. And I'm very excited about the next few years. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
And thank you all as well. This has been such a great episode. Thank you so much to all of our guests today for taking the time to be on the show and sharing with our listeners what CASAs do and the important role they play in bringing the Army and America together. Today, we learned about the CASA program, who the CASAs are, and what they do for our Army. We learned also about the major topics the CASAs are currently addressing and how individuals and organizations can find their CASAs. Great information for all of our listeners. Once again, thank you all for listening and tuning in to the Soldier for Life podcast. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to the Soldier for Life podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. This is Colonel Jared Thomas, and I'll see you again next time. Once a soldier, always a soldier, a soldier for life.